is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so thrilled today to welcome back to Joy on Paper Robert L. Dillenschneider, whose book, Decisions, we talked about the last time he was on. It's a fantastic book. But this new book, I am so thrilled with this new book. It is amazing. It is called Nailing It. And boy, oh boy, did he nail it. And the subtitle is How History's Awesome. 20-somethings Got It Together. Hi, Bob. How are you?
It's great to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's, you know, this book, you nailed it. Talk about nailing it. This is such a beautiful assortment, an eclectic assortment of 25 people who are inspiring and who have just, you know, the choice. I was so thrilled when I went through the choices. It was, you know, from people from the past to people today, and the wide-ranging nature of your choices. And the most important thing, too, is that we get an insight into you, into the work that you've been doing all these years and the people that you have been dealing with. And it's an exciting book.
You're very kind to say that. We actually started out with 100 people, and we winded it down to 25, all of whom are reasonably well-known. People like Coco Chanel, Albert Einstein, U.S. Grant, people like that. And we found one thing that each of them had. Each of them had, in their early 20s, late teens, a bad, bad situation. And they just sucked it up and had a determination to go forward. Each one of them did it. Each one of them set out a plan. Each one of them pursued and made the plan happen. And now each one of them is successful. I think young people have to do that today.
Well, I don't know if they're going to have any graduations anymore, you know, those nice big graduations where the kids come up on stage and they're handed their diplomas. I don't know, they're probably male nowadays, but I hope that they do. And I think this book would be the perfect gift for every person who's graduating from high school, because right there, so many young people are worried about what the future holds, and they are... So many have doubts, and so many are frightened. And reading this book will inspire them, because exactly as you said, their lives were not perfect. They come from maybe, you know, backgrounds that are poverty-stricken. And yet they got their act together, exactly as you said. They did it.
Patty, in my own case, when I came out of college, I had no idea what to do. Zero. And my dad sat in our little kitchen dining room, and we had a tuna fish sandwich at lunch. And he said, why don't you get a Trailways bus? He handed me the ticket to New York City. I was living in Columbus, Ohio. I got on the bus. I went to New York. My dad did say, by the way, at the end, he said, this is going to work, but I'll be here for you no matter what. Well, I got off the bus in New York City. I looked around, and I said, I got to do something now. And I think everybody is in that position when they're coming out of high school or college these days. They've got to do something. And God knows the world has plenty of opportunities. So there's all kinds of chances to do something significant and make your mark on the world.
Well, the assortment of people that you've selected is wonderful. And many of them are people that I have admired so much. But one of them, and let's start with this one, simply because I love this story about what she did. Rita Levi Montalcini, tell us about her, because this is fantastic. The story about how you met her and about what she accomplished.
A remarkable woman, still around, by the way, and I see her every year at the Ambrosetti Conference in Lake Como in Italy. I won't see her this year because the conference isn't going to be held because of the COVID. But when she walks in the room, and she's an older woman, silence hits the room. Everybody just pays her the homage and an attention that is quite extraordinary because of what she did. And again, here's a woman fighting against the odds in a male-dominated society, Italy, and saying, I'm going to do something important. And she did something important. And along the way, she fended off all the people that tried to stop her. But she did it, and today we've got her results, and we also still got her a great result.
And, of course, a Nobel Prize winner. What, you know, just tell us about your impressions of her as you had the opportunity to meet her. And, you know, it's just so exciting. I know that the place where you were meeting very well, I used to work for an Italian bank, and so I was there many times, and it must have been so thrilling when you first met her.
It was, and I would use these words to describe it. She was gracious. She was welcoming. She was strong. She was full of ideas. She tried to elicit from me and from others their ideas and their thinking. And she showed a level of respect that was incredible. What really came through, though, at the end was her determination, her plan, her focus to make something happen. She did that when she won the Nobel Prize, and she's still doing it today. And I'm really happy to have her as an acquaintance.
Well, you have lived yourself such an exciting life, going around the world, meeting all these wonderful people, including Coco Chanel.
Coco Chanel, I met her in the Ritz Hotel in Paris. Her operation at that time was on the Rue Cambon, which is just right adjacent to the back of the Ritz. And she walked in, and I immediately walked up, and we had a meeting, and I learned who she was and researched her background. She had a very difficult background. She was the lead color lady of the night in the Montmartre area, and she came through that and set up a brand, Chanel. You can't pick up a magazine today without seeing a Chanel ad. You can't go into a store today without seeing Chanel. The woman dominates what happened. And to her success, she did it herself. And she had people around her that were very helpful, but she did it herself. Estee Lauder was another woman, very much like Coco Chanel, but not really the strong, dominating presence Coco exhibited. But Estee Lauder was the number two in that space. I was thinking of trying to advance her. I pick Coco Chanel because the Chanel brand is so impressive.
When you were, when you were selecting the people, and I was one of the ones that you selected, I was so happy you did select him, Ulysses S. Grant, because I've always been a great admirer. I've read, of course, his autobiography, and I was I was sad that people didn't really understand what he was about. So what drew you to him?
Grant was an incredible person. He was and he won the war, by the way. He also ran a great presidency when he was president. But at the beginning, Grant was perceived as an incompetent, as a drunkard, as a person who couldn't get from point A to point B. He overcame all of that. And with his determination, again, I wish I was around to have met Grant, he motivated his people under him to go to a new and higher level. Very impressive young man. Very impressive man.
Now, did you, when you were reading about him, of course, I'm sure you read his autobiography, and what I loved, how he, after being the president, and how he took his world tour, and traveled around, he wanted to know more. He wanted to know about what was going on in the world. And I was always so impressed with his writing and his understanding of the ordinary person and how he could relate so beautifully to the people he met along the way, all as he traveled all around the world with his wife.
I look at a man like Grant and his wife, and then I look at Joe Biden, and I look at Bill Clinton. I think the greatest president we've had in the last couple of decades was Reagan. But I think Grant brought a special quality of humanness to the equation. He didn't try to overwhelm people. He didn't use power to overwhelm people. What he did was he tried to find out from people what made them tick. What did they care about? And then based on what they cared about, he helped form the policies for the United States. If Grant were in office, we would never have the reduction of people like Robert E. Lee and the taking down of his statue. Lee fought against Grant. Grant admired Lee. Lee admired Grant. So the statue is there, but it's now taken down. Grant would not have permitted that.
No, you're right. I agree. He was he had such character, and when he could have done many, you know, there were always people around him trying to take advantage of the presidency and trying to take advantage of him, but he had character, and I admire him so much, and I always tell people, you know, when you're looking at a president, to look at him, to look at what he did and what he accomplished. And he certainly would not have pulled out of Afghanistan in the way that
no,
we
wouldn't.
Oh my goodness, that's still, it's I can't imagine what he would think about something like that.
Well, I'm sure he would not have left soldiers behind in Afghanistan, which has happened, and that's a terrible, terrible thing that occurred for our country, but it's now done. We got to go forward, and the United States is still the strongest country in the world. People try to diminish us again and again. Putin is in Russia trying to diminish us. Mr. Xi is in China trying to diminish us one time after another. And, you know, I look at it and I say, what are we going to do? I saw a film, United 93, the other night. It's about the United flight that crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It was on its way to hit the Pentagon. Three other planes, by the way, did hit the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. United 93 crashed. I said to myself, would I have had the courage, would I have the guts to do what the people on board did that day to overcome the Arabs who were trying to steal our lives? And I guess the real message here is that, for me, is this. These people tried. They tried at the World Trade Center. They tried at the World Trade Center several years ago before this. They're going to try again. So why are we letting all this happen? What are we going to do about this? We need a leader, Joe Biden, if it's Joe Biden. We need a leader, Donald Trump, if it's Donald Trump, whoever it's going to be, to help us through this situation. We don't need people breathing down our necks like this.
And the problem is, where are we going to find these leaders in this younger generation? There are so many of the younger generation who we can admire. Those young men and women who joined the military, who wanted to go out and to protect the country. So many of them suffered so much and lost so much, but they still have that spirit. They still want to go forward and make America a better place. And you know, when we recently had Veterans Day and when we celebrated or at least honored the memory of 9/11, to see all those people who just want to do the best for the country, it is so admirable, and it makes your heart just swell with joy to see people like that.
We have remarkable young men and women in our country who are prepared and who are stepping forward. I'm thrilled by that. The older people in the country, people in their later 60s, 70s, they're still in control, but they better figure out a way to include the younger people, because the younger people are coming, and they're coming with a rush, and they're coming with new ideas, new ways of thinking about the country, ways of thinking about all elements of the country. It's their time.
Well, that's why your book is inspiring, because they can see as they read these stories, and I hope that we can get this book out to a wide range of young people. So, you know, one of the things, it is important, and I'm very happy that more young people are realizing that you can do great things without getting this four-year college degree. An education is wonderful. It's fantastic. But the will to just work hard to tackle something and to just succeed is so much more important.
Absolutely is. And a lot of people in the book take exactly that position. To work hard and succeed doesn't have to necessarily be a grand idea, but it has to be something that is going to move the ball forward. They do that. That's happening now all over the country. This is a very exciting time to be an American and to look at what's occurring out there. Are there problems? Yes. Are there shootings, unfortunately? Yes. Are there demonstrations going on that shouldn't be happening? Yes. Are the people still talking about defunding the cops? Yes. But covering all of that is a huge group of men and women who are determined to take the country forward. That's exciting.
I love people who have great dreams, great imagination. That's why when I start the program, I always say, this is a program for people who dream of writing, and hopefully I can inspire them. I know I have, because just recently we had NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month, and so many of my listeners did it for the first time. They finally said, yeah, you know, I can do it. I can try and have that persistence and have a big dream. And one of the people who had a really big dream, and I want you to tell this story about I Am Pei, because there he was in China watching American movies and dreaming about coming to America where he could be free and do great things.
I Am Pei is probably the greatest architect of our time. Remarkable man. I remember being with him in Paris, and we were discussing the pyramid that is in front of the Louvre, and we're discussing with François Mitterrand and Jacques Chirac, the president of Paris and the mayor of Paris, president of France. Pei presented the pyramid. Mitterrand looked at Chirac, same verses, and said, we can't possibly do that. We have the Louvre. It would be a tremendous mistake put this pyramid, which is so modern, so avant-garde, in the Louvre. Chirac looked back at Mitterrand and said, we have to do it. We have to take a chance. That's what the French people were all about. Well, the pyramid's there. It's hugely successful, and it worked. So Pei was capable of doing things like that. He was a remarkable man. He went to Bedford-Stuyvesant, the slums in New York, and he took four blocks. And he made those four blocks a model of New York. He was quite good at doing this.
So you were in the room. I mean, that's so exciting to think of being in the room at that moment when they're talking about this. Tell us a little bit more about him, because you worked for him. Your firm worked with him, right?
I worked directly with him. He was brilliant. I mean, he was the kind of man, when you went in, you just listened to everything he said, and you made sure that something you said to him, wasn't casual. It had some meaning to it, because everything in his life was driven by an idea or a position or a view, and the guy was brilliant. He also had the ability, by the way, to take men and women who might not have the same caliber as him and help them rise up to several notches beyond what they were capable of. He brought people forward. That was one of the things Pei did extremely well.
And I think it worked. I love the pyramid. The first time I saw it, I thought, yeah, you know, it belonged there. I thought, yep, this was just the right thing. Anything else wouldn't have worked. But this was, you know, that forward thinking, the brilliance that he had in conceiving this pyramid that I don't think anybody else could have done. It's just beautiful.
Pei's real desire, and he only did it once, was to put up significant programs in China. He did it once with a hotel, and it's a nice hotel, but he never got the really huge program in China that he wanted to have. Tried to get it in Hong Kong, couldn't do it. Tried to get it in Beijing and Shanghai, couldn't do it. But that's the one thing he didn't do. He did programs all over the world, and I'll never forget one time, he called me on the phone. It was about midnight. I picked up the phone. I said, hello. He said, I am Bob. I am Pei. I said, okay, I am. What's the story? He said, People magazine wants to put me on the cover with Jackie Kennedy. What do you think? And I said, I am. People who read People magazine aren't going to buy your projects. And he said, but it's Jackie Kennedy. And so he went on the cover of People magazine.
Wow. And, of course, it was wonderful that he lived a nice, long life and until he was 102. And I think that's also inspiring to young people to realize that you can keep going. And when you are doing something that you love, when you find that whatever it is, whatever you want to build, whatever you want to write, whatever you want to paint, you can just keep doing it into your old age and have a great life.
Go for it. That's the name of the game. If you really want to do something, just invest yourself in it. If it's collecting stamps, do it. If it's running a baseball team, do it. If it's running a division of a company, do it. Whatever it happens to be, do it. And just make sure you're happy in the process. Everything that happens to you as you're doing something, make sure you're happy. You're satisfied. It'll get better.
Exactly. And what I love among your selections, one of the ones that I really just gravitated to, actually, it's, when I got the book and I looked at, you know, the list, the one I read first, I just skipped and I jumped straight to Audrey Hepburn. And I was surprised that you selected her. But once I read the story, I could see why you did.
Audrey Hepburn reflected a style and class that just very few people have. With the look that she would look at somebody, with the comment she'd make with just a few words, she set a high water mark that everybody had to move toward. She was a beautiful woman. And again, to be in her presence was style. It was, you felt like you were someplace. Really remarkable human being.
And she suffered so much. She went through World War II. And yet she comes out, she has this incredible spirit and just the zest for life.
She was terrific in that regard. She everything was brand new to her every day. And every time she got up in the morning, she said to herself, I'm going to do this today. And she did it. She's a remarkable person. And she motivated many young men, many young women, to go to a higher level. Audrey Hepburn was really quite a person. Of course, as we all know, she was a major factor in the movies.
But she was beyond just the movies, because it was almost simply looking at her face, and you felt this joy in her face that she wanted people to find a joy in their own lives, and I admire her so much. And when I was young, I would watch her films over and over, because it was something in her films that made me say, yeah, life can be just absolutely grand. And so I was really happy with that selection.
Audrey Hepburn made life special for those people she was around. It's very much, Matthew, like your show. I mean, your show is a really unique show. You bring a level of a discourse and a level of style to the listener that is just second to none. I think it's a great show, and I'm delighted to be on, by the way.
Well, thank you so much. What I love is that I've had this wonderful chance to, you know, when it occurred to me, I was in doing the program for about 3 months, and suddenly I realized, you know, I can talk to anybody I want to talk to. You know, I wasn't controlled by anybody, so I could talk to, you know, I talked to Poet Laureate of the United States, and I could talk to, you know, the most famous global best-selling author, like Lee Child has been on the program many times. But I could also then find an author who just started off just writing her first little book, 99 pages, and she's so thrilled, and she's so hopeful. And nobody, and she's, you know, trying to get some attention, trying to get somebody to talk to her about her book. And then I get her. And next thing I know, not only am I, you know, promoting her book and giving her marketing advice, because that sort of comes naturally to me. So I have all this wonderful, wonderful opportunity to help people. And I've added to my program several people who do these book buzz promos. We do them free and we play them often because people forget about a book. And very famous authors, I had one very famous author on, and she was sad about something. I could hear it in her voice. And she said, well, people don't remember what I wrote. And I said, yeah, but I do. And that's why you're on my program. Because I called her out of the clear blue sky. She had not had a new book for 6 years. But after that,
that's what it takes.
She was inspired. She said, you know, I'm going to start writing again because somebody cares. And so that's what I love to do. And I love to just, I want people to read and find this joy that I find and to write and find that joy, which obviously you have found in all of the books that you write. And just to learn more, I think when listeners hear more about the author, it draws them to the author and they want to know more. And now knowing, for example, that you knew I.M. Pei, I mean, this makes you, it sort of kicks you up a notch in people's mind. They'll say, whoa, you know, this is fascinating because, you know, you're not a famous name in the writing world yet. You know, but boy, this I think will impress people, and that's the kind of thing I like to draw out. And you know, when you write about these people that you care about, then other people will start caring about them too. One of the ones, of course, I was lucky enough to see Rudolf Nureyev. You know, I lived in England. I moved to England when I was 21 years old, and I did all the theater. I went to every program. I just loved, you know, the West End. I spent my evenings going to the theater and, of course, to the ballet. And I managed to see Rudolf Nureyev. Tell us why you included him in this book.
Well, Nureyev obviously came out of Russia, went through Europe, came to the United States, dealt in different cultures. But Nureyev did one thing that most people don't do. He was an extraordinary talent. He was the best talent in his field. No dancer like him before or ever since. The guy was fantastic. And he did it, and he also expressed a humanness in terms of the way he operated. You could talk to Nureyev. He would see you. He'd go see a sick person and spend time with him. He was that kind of guy. So Nureyev definitely should have been, is in the book, and should have been in the book.
Now, when you were going through the book, there are people, you know, will be saying, why, for example, did you pick Sally Ride and Krista McAuliffe?
Sally Ride was the first female in space. She bucked the trend. Nobody thought she was going to be able to do it. She had the courage to step forward in a man's world. Nobody thought a woman could go into outer space. Sally Ride did it. And if I had a criticism of Sally Ride, it's this. She could have done more, and she could have leveraged what she did, but she didn't do that. She was the first woman in space, which is pretty terrific.
And, of course, Krista McAuliffe, the first civilian, I guess. What a brave thing to do.
Absolutely took guts, took courage, took running against the grain, took criticism, but did it. And that's the important thing. I think young people need to recognize you just need to have the guts and courage to stand up, work your plan, and go forward. That makes a big difference. Most people today don't have a plan, but determine what you want to do. You want to do X, and then say, here are the first three steps to get there. This is what I'm going to do. And then step forward and do that.
And I think one of the things, of course, that comes through the book is that all of the people who have succeeded, they've had this determination and the strength to stick with it. And really, really, if it's a talent that they've had, to hone that talent so that they can make a difference in the world.
I think your point, sticking with it, is so important. Einstein was told on many occasions. He had no place to go. He was a nutcase. Nobody really wanted his thinking. But then he came up with something called the theory of relativity, and it worked out pretty well.
And so, and also, I think it's wonderful if people learn to respect everybody, because here he was working in a patent office, and people think, "Oh, who's this guy in a patent office?" And many of the people in the stories that you've written about, the beginning of their lives were very simple, very, you know, not impressive. But somewhere they had that in their mind that they were going to accomplish something. And really, the changes sometimes were very quick, you know, from working for your father in a tanning company or whatever, and then suddenly everything just sort of comes together and you can fly. And to know that you can fly if you want to fly.
That's exactly right. And people today, if they have that vision, if they have that ideal, it's possible. They can do it. So I'm all for it.
And one of the ones I liked also was the Jackie Robinson story. The Jackie Robinson story, I think, is fascinating. I remember my father would always talk about having the chance to see Jackie Robinson and how impressed he was with him.
Jackie Robinson, a great baseball player who happened to be black, just changed the world. All organized sports, all throughout the United States, has changed because of Jackie Robinson. Of course, the real story behind Jackie Robinson is a man named Branch Rickey. Branch Rickey is the guy who came out of Kent State in Ohio and went to New York, was the head of the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he recruited Robinson. He found a way to bring Robinson into the major leagues. And God, did Robinson have to deal with negatives every step of the way. But he did it, and he overcame it, and his sheer talent showed through.
Now, although we lived in Detroit and we were Tigers fans and we went to the Tigers games, my father, of course, would take me even when I was a baby, and I'd be, you know, carried on his shoulder. But he was always, his second team was the Dodgers, simply because of Jackie Robinson.
Dodgers were a remarkable team. Still are, out on the West Coast right now. But, you know, we've got now in New York, we've got the Mets, we've got the Yankees. It's going to be a terrific time in the next year if they get through this player's strike, which I'm sure they will.
And if they can get an audience again.
Yeah, well, that's the key. And, you know, it's when Mickey Mantle, number 7, was playing for the Yankees in center field, he was the highest paid baseball player in the country. His salary was $100,000. Think about what that would happen today. I mean, Mantle did it, but today that $100,000 doesn't even get you in the dugout.
Well, when you think about these people and the choices that you made, as you said, you had 100 people to start with. Which other ones do you have more personal stories about meeting them and knowing them?
Well, I knew a lot of people who were in the book. The one person I wanted to meet, I never did, was Helen Keller. I mean, this is an incredible human being, and she overcame every conceivable roadblock you could have in your life to do remarkable things. Helen Keller was just a fantastic person. Again, we talked about Coco Chanel, U.S. Grant, Steve Jobs is another one. There are a lot of people in the book like that, and they all have one basic lesson for the reader, which is decide what you want to do, be determined to do it, have a plan for doing it, and go forward. Don't be deterred by people or events that try to block your way. Just overcome them.
Well, tell us about Othmar Amman, because he's not a household name. I don't think most people have ever heard about him. But his story is fascinating.
His story is fascinating. Again, here's a man who overcame overcame difficulty to triumph in his own country, was generally thought of to be a strange person at one point, but he overcame that, and he did it with real talent and real insight, and that's what he did. He did it with a plan, specifically, steps 1, 2, and 3. That's what young people have to do today. He's a great symbol for people in his country, for people, frankly, around the world.
So tell us what he did, because I think people will be really impressed with what he accomplished.
Well, he was a person that brought life and excitement and intelligence to what he accomplished. That's what he did. And he did it in more than one area. He did it in a lot of different areas. So, again, a remarkable individual. I wish there were more people out there like him, Betsy.
And one of the things, you know, when we are talking about careers and people are unsure of where to go, what to do with their lives, and in so many cases nowadays, I think that young people go to college, and I'm not sure, you know, when I look back and I look at the education of our founders and the stringent education and what they learned in in those days compared to what people are learning sometimes in college now, because it's so important this in the for the founders, one of the courses and one of the things that they learned was logic. Logic is so important. And I don't think they teach enough in college nowadays that people have to learn to think, to be able to take all of the information in. You know, it's not a matter of just getting so much coursework and getting so, you know, just sort of getting through that 4 years. You feel sometimes that people are just, I've got to get through this 4 years. But they're not thinking about what will really make them happy, what they really want to do. And if they, I think if they read this book, they'll start to say, yeah, you know, sometimes people are really great at one thing or they dedicate themselves to a subject and they take off with that subject, and they're happy when they do so.
That's exactly what happens. And education in this country, and frankly around the world, is taking a different view these days. I think we're going to get back, however, to people being focused on specific objectives, figuring out how they get from point A to point B, and then doing it. I think education is going in that direction. It's going to be probably a 5 or 10 year slog to get to that spot, but I think we're headed that way right now.
But I am always impressed with the young people who go out there and do things and start things. There are so many young people who are a life of dedication to their communities. And that was one of the things that came out in the story you wrote about Golda Meir, that when she was young, she got out there and raised money for books. And you do hear these inspiring stories about kids who nowadays who will go out and do fundraising for needy people, for homeless people, for different things like that. And these are the type of people we need. And Golda Meir certainly set an example.
Golda Meir, on the west side of New York, was no place. And she looked at Israel and said to herself, I got to do something. And she sucked it up, and she did it. And she is responsible for the modern-day Israel we see today. And she did it. She was strong. She had the ear and the confidence of other people around the world, and she made Israel the power it is today. Really quite remarkable. Human being.
Tell us a little bit about Anor Domir, because this was something quite unexpected, that he would become a cartoonist and have such an influence over the politics of France.
The artists in France, Chagall, Monet, people like that, looked at Domier and said, this guy's not part of our game. He's just an illustrator. Well, the truth is that Daumier, who again lived in Montmartre, did these political and regular cartoons and drawings that changed life. People did things because of what he did. I'm not saying Chagall and Monet are bad artists. They're great artists, but so is Daumier. Daumier was never considered, however, by the establishment as one of their. He was always positioned as an outsider.
So he has a special place in your heart. You like to collect his works.
Yeah, I have. I may be the biggest Daumier collector in the United States. I have them on my walls all over the place. I love to go from piece to piece, trying to say to myself, what did he have in mind when he did this? And it's just quite, the guy was remarkable, a highly creative talent.
Oh, and really brilliant. It is brilliant work and underappreciated. But I hope that people will have when they read your book, they'll go and of course you can find it on the internet and find all of his work, and it is fascinating, and just to think that you have all of this collection, it's wonderful.
It's remarkable when I go into art stores and I ask about Daumier. Frequently, people look at me with an incredulous look. Who is he? But then we get into who actually he was, and the difference comes through. He had an enormous impact on France when he was alive and working, and his work still has a big impact on France.
And many of it, I mean, it's, some of it as relevant today as when he wrote it, because human nature doesn't seem to have changed too much.
No, it doesn't. Human nature is the same. Always has been, and always, I think, will be. You know, we tend to look at things and say to ourselves, well, I'm the most important person in the world. Well, these telescopes that have just been launched are going to, I think, prove something at some point, that we're not the most important people in the world. There are people that are much more important than we are. So let's see how that goes. Could be quite interesting.
Well, I should mention, of course, that you have an introduction here, and it was very nice of him to write. At the time, he was the U.S. ambassador, Donald Blinken, but he's gone up in the world.
Donald Blinken was the ambassador to Hungary. His son, Anthony Blinken, is now the Secretary of State. Tough job, brilliant people, and extremely caring and sensitive about other people. I mean, Blinken had that ability. He looked beyond his immediate needs and said, how do I care about other people? What do I do about them? And he always came through in that score. Don Blinken was an outstanding man. When I asked him to write the foreword, he didn't hesitate for a second. He did it right away.
And so many others did, too. I know everybody has high praise for this book, and rightly so, because I hope that this book can get out to this new generation, and that they will be inspired. And one of the areas, of course, that I think where it should be promoted is with homeschool parents, because as a homeschool parent, I was always looking for books that would inspire my boys, and that of course, people that they could look up to. They were very much involved with music, and of course, they knew all about Mozart. And in fact, they played Mozart at various ages in their lives. So I was happy that you included Mozart in here. You know, sometimes when people are looking at people to admire, Mozart comes right to the top, and I want to tell people, you know, you have, somebody has this talent, but he suffered so much too, and he worked hard.
I wasn't there, obviously, with Mozart composing, but the guy was a young man. He died a young man, and he thought, I think in those days, let me just have another 5 minutes and I'll do something important, and he did. And Mozart, at that point, was considered really an outlander, an outcast. But his music sang through. It worked. And he's today one of the most important people in the world when it comes to music.
Well, you've made a wonderful selection here. I think it will be inspiring to anybody who reads the book. I hope that you will, you know, nowadays, of course, it's difficult to get out there and talk to groups of people and however you market it. But one of the things, as I said, I think that it should definitely be on the list for homeschool groups, for them to get this book. And with parents now who are so concerned about the education of their children, and this is important. I'm glad that parents are now taking an active part in looking at what their children are learning and who their children should look up to. And I think those parents will find this book very enlightening and very a book that they can talk to their children about, because they really need, people need to have these role models that will send them in the right direction and open their eyes and open their minds to how to make the world a better place. And you've done that with this wonderful book, which is called Nailing It, How History's Awesome 20-somethings Got It Together. And, you know, you've done a great job. And, of course, the name is Robert L. Dylan Schneider. It's easy to find. It's on wherever books are sold. I hope bookstores are open, but definitely on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And Bob, I just admire you so much. I think the wonderful thing about it is there's all the personal stories in here that you share with readers. I think that's also remarkable. So we have 25 people that you've chosen, plus you, because you are also an inspiration.
You're very kind to say that. It's an honor to be on this show.
Well, thank you so much. And you don't have a website or anything. Did you have a website that you wanted people to go to?
I really don't have a website. You can go to the dylanschneidergroup.com. That's the website. But the book is...
It's available.
Part of that.
Yeah. And that's the important thing. And I hope that, as I said, market it to the parents, there are more and more parent groups who are out there and say, we want our kids to have good examples of people to inspire them. And they will find 25 here, and I have a feeling there's going to be another book. You've got a lot more people.
I'm literally working on one right now.
Here we are. I knew it, because once you find that joy on paper, you can't stop, can you?
That's for sure.
That's for sure. And I'm sure it's going to be another great book. And you are inspiring just on your own, your group, your organization that you've built, and the people that you help over the years with all of your great public relations work is fantastic. And Robert L. Dylan Schneider, I think you're terrific.
I feel the same about you, Patsy. Thanks. Thanks again. It's an honor to be on the show.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Bob. Bye.
Take care. Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Nailing It. Boy, oh boy, did he nail it with this book. If you know anybody, you know, you want to be inspired yourself, and if you know anybody with younger people, 18 years and up, get them this book. It's an easy-to-read book. He has all these little talking points, all these little sort of just little information that really makes the book fascinating. And it is a book that you can share with the people in your family. Get one for yourself. Send it to some kid. Send it to a young person. I say kid. You know, if they're 20 years old or 25 years old, they're still a kid to me. Send it to somebody that you know. And they will be inspired by these stories. I was inspired because I was thinking, well, you know, they're still going at 102. That's pretty great. It makes you feel good. Which reminds me, in February, Eugenia Lovett will be on celebrating her 99th birthday. And I am so, so excited about that. Because that's one of the wonderful things about writing. It's just what Mary Higgins Clark told me when she was 89 years old and wrote her last bestseller. And her last bestseller, the pre-order was 1 million books. Think of that. Her pre-order, she was 89 years old, and the pre-order for her books was 1 million books. So, you know, this is the exciting thing about being a writer. Again, thank all of you. My email is patsy.radio@gmail.com. I love hearing about your adventures with NaNoWriMo. It doesn't matter if you didn't finish. Some of you didn't finish. Some of you just, you know, my goodness, everything was happening. All these things are happening. And it's been difficult. Some people have been, you know, stuck in the house, but also for a while there in November, people were actually out and about again. And it was exciting. And they didn't finish, but it doesn't matter. If you didn't finish in November, you can finish in December. And January is coming up, and you can start the new year. And you can start, if it takes you a year to write a book, what difference does it make? As long as you're writing and finding that joy on paper, that Bob Dylan Schneider, I love him. He's just fantastic. He found the joy of writing, and now he can't stop. And that's what's so wonderful about writing. Once you find that joy on paper, you can't stop, and you just keep going and going and going and having fun all along the way. And I hope that you will too, because I have been seeing more and more wonderful emails coming through. And I just really appreciate it, because I want you to feel that same joy that all of the people that are on my program who have written a book, and they've discovered it, and you can discover it too. I just got another book. Every time I turn around, I am getting books. I'm getting books and books. I got 5 books the other day. I'm going to have a busy New Year's weekend. But anyway, I want to just remind everyone, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her new series, Haunted Haven, set right here in Florida. What a wonderful series that would be. And then she's, of course, got Witch City Mysteries, and we've got a wedding coming up with that one in April. Whoa, book number 12 in her Witch City Mysteries. Can you imagine? And she's done it all in less than 7 years. My goodness, my goodness. She's fantastic. And say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Big Ed, thank you for everything. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him, because I should have been a general. I would have been, well, maybe not as good as Ulysses S. Grant, but I would have been good. I would have been very, very good, because I love to boss people around. Okay, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.